I believe I can fly. What do you want to do before you die? It's a good question. Four young men have been asking millions of people that for the last 6 years, and along the way, they've travelled the United States in a purple bus. They've got their own reality TV show. They've attracted the attention of legions of followers all the time, asking the same question and also crossing things off their own bucket list on the show. Now they've culled 200 answers for their new book, which is out today. It's the aptly titled, What Do You Want to Do Before You Die? A great question, panel, which we thought we'd ask your good selves. Is there something that if someone said to you, name it, you've got to do this before you go?
Oh, I'm doing it right now, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Steve. It's nice for you to say.
Yeah, how close are you sitting?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I don't want to answer that because I always think of really, really sort of dumb things that...
Yeah, it can be. It's the thing that comes uppermost.
Well, fairly dumb. Things that I'd like to do, I'd like to do some sort of cultural things, actually. I'd really like to see some really fantastic opera in Vienna. That would be fun.
Or maybe one of the big open-air ones in Italy or somewhere.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah? And see the mad ring cycle, sort of in, how do you pronounce that, Bayreuth? You know, the...
Yes, I do.
You do know.
I
and
do.
And pronouncing it is just heinous. But I once saw just one section of it, Parsifal, with the opera in Berlin. And it was as mad as anything. Mad as a cut snake. I just thought, this is fabulous. I would like to see more of that. It had Daniel Barenboim, and it had this orchestra pit full of double basses. It was so unusual, the composition of the sound. I'm not very musical, Jim. This is why I feel slightly odd talking about this, but there are things that I think I would enjoy, actually.
All right, that's good. And Chris, our panel producer, says he wants to be in a hot air balloon over the Serengeti during animal migration time. And I can think that's a great thing to want to do.
And it's nice having these goals and these things you want to do. But there is a danger in all of this. If you end up very, very single-minded and doggedly pressing ahead to get that one thing, you're going to miss everything that's happening around you. I never, when I was a teenager and growing up in England, said, you know, one day I'm going to move to New Zealand and I'm going to live in Pukekohe, and that's my ambition, and I will not rest until I've achieved it. Never crossed my mind. That's how my life's turned out. And I couldn't be happier. And I think the danger is, if I said, I have to do this, I will not rest until I have achieved my goals, then I wouldn't be where I am right now. And maybe I would have had this sense of achievement, but I don't know I would have had the sense of contentment. And so by being this driven and this utterly goal-oriented, you're denying the opportunity for serendipity in your life.
Yeah. Life's what happens to you when you're making other plans, while you're making other plans.
Precisely. And can we also just say, this whole before you die meme that's coming along, when else are you going to do it? Please.
Yes, that's a very good point. Included in the book, I want to put Hogwarts admission letters into as many mailboxes as possible. I want to free an innocent man from jail. I want to be the first girl to play for the San Francisco Giants. They got to play... basketball. It took a while. Speaking of access to the nation's leaders, which Mike Williams was talking about, they got to play basketball with Obama.
I wonder how much that cost.
I don't think it cost anything.
Mm-mm.
I don't think they had to pay £250,000.
Oh, yes.
They just got to play with Obama and on the White House courts, and that would be something as well.
That would be rather cool, yeah.
It would. As the mother of an Auckland police officer, I am far more concerned about my son's safety than any criminal's welfare. I am grateful whenever they are given anything to protect themselves and others. We've got it all wrong in this country. Thanks, Rosemary. Please don't mention my name. Shan't, but thank you for the text. And there are many of those coming in on that topic. What have our panellists been thinking about? Your bees, of course. Anything else out in the idyllic life in Pukekohe?
Well, I mean, Pukekohe is going to remain a fantastically well-kept secret in New Zealand, because the one thing that's been really annoying lately is the access to the damn place. We have a train station in Pukekohe, but you'd never guess it if you actually tried to, like, wait for a train there. Take a look at the train timetables. It's horrible. Like, one train in four actually gets further south than Papakura. The ones that do, I mean, you sit in the station at Papakura and they'll announce, you know, the 312 to Britomart, the 319 to Britomart, and they'll say, the next service to Pukekohe, because we've got no idea when it's coming. It notionally has a time allocated to it, but it'll come when it's good and ready, if it even comes. I mean, lately they've been cancelling them and putting taxis on. And the cynic in me thinks that maybe what Kiwi Rail, whoever it is who run these damn trains, is trying to do is say, look, if we really make it really, really rubbish, then nobody will take the trains, and then we'll say, look, there's no demand for them, we can cut the line off completely. And as it is, poor old Pukekohe, there we are, with a red-headed stepchild of the network. No one sends a train down there. I mean, they're electrifying the line. As far as Papakura, the rest of us, we're going to get a diesel shuttle. Come on, please.
Was it better in Salford?
Well, there you go. British Rail, don't even get me. It was better in Tokyo, when you could stand on the platform with a little line marked on the platform in paint, and you knew that at 3:12 there would be a train door arrive in front of you. Now, you'd have a bloke in white gloves shoving you on because you couldn't fit any more bodies into the sardine tin.
Yeah.
But at least you knew the train was coming.
Would you like a jigger?
A what now?
A jigger.
A jigger of whiskey, certainly, sir.
No, no, one of those wee motorised devices that places on the rails.
Oh, great. And do I have, like...
Personalised transport.
Oh, like Bugs Bunny on the other side of it, cranking it with me. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that would work, yeah.
Yeah.
If it'll get me to work on time, I'll take it.
I was just thinking, your transport sounds like the Mount Victoria bus in Wellington. Every time I go to catch the Mount Victoria bus, I just mention this, it only goes once an hour. Oh, mm-hmm. Greenies who think we should all catch it.
Mm-hmm.
And last few times I've tried to catch it, it never turned up. So I think that's rather a sort of hit and miss, we might be in the mood today or we might not be in the mood thing.
Mm.
And incidentally, your thing about bees, it just reminds me, I had this experience years ago, a long time ago. I was in France and I was talking to people who represented farming groups, and mm-hmm. I went to talk to a group of people who represented them in some area near the Pyrenees or something. I think they were the peasant farmers. And to my infinite joy, I asked a man what he farmed, and he replied, bees.
Mm.
And it turned out like about 6 hives.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you little darling.
Yeah.
He absolutely straight-faced. It was a total manly thing. He could have said, oh, I'm running 20,000 head. But he said, bees.
Bees. Yeah, my 20,000 girls in the garden, they're what keep the farmers of Pukekohe going.
I suppose they are.
Well, they are. I mean, a third of the world's food supply pollinated by bees. Without my bees, you're not going to eat.
Yep. Somebody, I'm grateful to you.
Thank you very much.
I grovel.
Somebody on the text asking if the new charge is $190 per bee.
Well, yes. Until someone comes out and counts them, I'm not paying it.
Yeah, good idea.
Strong stand.
Works for me.
Strong
prove
stand
that they're there.
McCabe.
Stick your nose in.
Well, yeah. I have to say, I did mention to a friend back in the US a couple of years ago that we're going to start keeping bees, and she wrote back and she said, you know, I think that's terrible. I heard that they clip the wings of all the bees.
Oh, she didn't.
I'm not going to name names, but that, every single bee, all 20,000 of them, and then we carry them to the flowers.
Prove they're mine. I myself only have 3.
In the hive.
Rosemary, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was just, I guess it was a depressing story, really. I really don't want to talk about a depressing thing, but I'm always upset by cruelty to animals, for a start. You know, I'm a soft touch there. But that joint Women's Refuge and SPCA research into how male bullies in families treat pets and all these women who stay in relationships because of the awful things they say they'll do to their pets, it was the most revolting insight into what misery some people live in, you know what I mean? What sort of hells they live in. One woman who'd stayed for 22 years. I mean, I guess when you're being bullied, the fight kind of goes out of you, but the idea that you would torment your family by torturing animals is just so horrible.
Bob Kerridge was always hot on the link between cruelty to animals and violence against other human beings, and he always believed police and the courts ought to pay more attention to offences against animals because it shows such a lack of empathy.
Well, it's totally right. I mean, you know, the cruelty to seals. I mean, I sort of have to leave the room a bit with reports like that. Remember those awful people, including an All Black, I seem to recall, shooting harmless seals basking, you know, within range. I don't begin to understand it. I'm becoming very, very soppy about it all with age.
Oh, I think people are soppy about it from early in their lives, aren't they? They're
Well, they should be. They should be brought up to be like that. And it should be one of those forbidden things, like doing that to other people, really.
Thank you for raising it. Rosemary McLeod on the panel with Steve McCabe and Mark Reason about to join us. The sports writer, New Zealand cricketer Chris Cairns, says fighting to clear his name in the High Court in London was a real roller coaster. His supporters have been celebrating after the former Indian Premier League boss Lalit Modi was ordered to pay $175,000 in damages and $750,000 odd in court costs over a post made on Twitter in 2010. And it was a tweet which accused Chris Cairns of match-fixing in the 08 season of the now-defunct Indian Cricket League. And he said the claim was untrue, therefore libelous, and had damaged his reputation. Before we get Mark on this, one of the points Mark Reeson makes in writing locally about this is, were you aware that Chris Cairns had been accused of match-fixing before this lawsuit over the tweet?
No, I wasn't.
Right. Rosemary, had you ever heard about it, or do you follow cricket to that extent?
No.
Okay. Has this trial, you know, and the attendant stories in the media given you any kind of better understanding of what actually goes on or went on in the Indian Cricket League?
Not at all.
No.
Okay. Sports writer Mark Reeson, just as well,
yeah,
joining the panel. Mark, good afternoon.
I hope you're not hoping that I'm going to elucidate on this either.
we do scratch our heads and wonder how much it pervaded that league and how much of it goes on in the subcontinent, because we simply do not know.
No, we don't know, and there is, unfortunately, no way of knowing. All we do know is that match-fixing, spot-betting, all this sort of stuff's been going on in cricket for 200 years or so. But it's only recently that there's been so much money in the game, and the sub-Asian and the Asian bookmakers have got real hooks into it, that it's been going on to quite this extent.
Yes, to quite an extent, apparently, because, I mean, you write on Fairfax that, you know, the verdict changes nothing because everybody is still under suspicion, everybody's still on trial. But, I mean, Chris Cairns can't help that. He was defamed and he has the right to sue for libel, of course.
Of course he has, and he was defamed because the bloke couldn't prove the point. And that's why the libel laws exist. But as you've just explained, many people didn't know in the first place that this accusation had ever been made against him. Originally, only 65 people ever read the tweet, and then it went on a website called Crick Info, and it reached about 1,000. So quite why he wanted to make it as public as he did, I'm not really sure, unless he was particularly interested in winning the case and earning himself quite a lot of money, which he obviously did in the end.
Well, I wondered about that, actually, when I saw he got X £100,000 or something. I thought, well, a lawyer will snaffle that. He'll walk away with nothing.
Well, I think Modi has to pay his damages as well.
His costs as well as the damages?
His costs. Yeah.
The papers are reporting he's paying £400,000 in costs.
Yeah.
Okay.
In addition to his own legal fees.
Oh, well, I wish they'd... Yeah, I didn't read that this morning, so that's good.
It's also worth noticing that this is a tweet that went out around the world by an Indian about something that allegedly happened in India involving a Kiwi, and yet it was tried in England.
Yeah, and well, in fact, the defence, Modi's defence, wanted it thrown out of court precisely because of that. I think they called it libel tourism or some such thing, and said it should have been heard in an Indian court. I think they had some justification in that claim, but Justice Bean, Mr. Bean, decided that Cairns, because he had played county cricket in England and because Modi now lived in England, it was justifiable to hold the case in England. But it looked to me as though they'd gone to England because England has a particular history of awarding libel damages.
Yeah, England's getting notorious for, as you put it, libel tourism. Mm. And the way the law works at the moment, apparently, in England, is very, very heavily weighted toward claimants. Chances are, if you file a libel suit, you are likely to win it because you immediately put the responsibility, the burden of proof, on the claimee. Yeah. And as a result, people are bringing suits from all around the world. London is becoming a destination of choice for people who wish to file libel suits.
Well, with the City of London going not doing quite so good business, maybe they're trying to get extra money through the courts of London.
Well, they are actually trying to reform the libel laws even at the moment. And now, this would probably affect Mr. Cairns quite considerably, the new reform bill that's working its way through the process at the moment, saying that you must be able to show substantial harm. And we say 65 people read the tweet.
I thought the scale of the damages was absolutely ludicrous. The judge did give them leave to appeal against the actual amount, but not to appeal against the verdict.
The harm becomes potentially far more substantial with all the reportage, though, doesn't it, in the end? But that's as a result of bringing the case to court. And, Mark Reeson, you know, you say you know, however innocent Chris Cairns is, there's a cloud over his head forever. But why? Why will there be any cloud over Chris Cairns? Because he's won the case.
Because a number of Indian cricketers turned up in court and accused him of match-fixing.
Yes, but...
And the justice involved obviously didn't think their testimony was sufficiently believable. But there'll be plenty of people out there who go, well, if all these people turned up, and if the head of corruption, who was in charge of the IPL at the time, testified against him, and if he was thrown out of the league for injury, as it was reported, although Modi accused him obviously of match fixing. If all these people have testified against him, there'll be a lot of people who go, no smoke without fire. It's inevitable. It's human nature.
So you're saying that no matter how innocent Chris Cairns was, it may have been counterproductive for him choosing the option to take it to court?
I would have thought so, because so many people now know of all the accusations that have been made against him, and very few did before.
We're still, I think we're still confused about the extent to which it goes on the subcontinent. Are you saying that those leagues have tarnished the game, or is it simply money? Is it simply whenever you get sports betting?
I don't know if you can tarnish the game. If you go back 200 years and there were some very dodgy matches. There was one, I think, where the Duke of Dorset was fingered for dropping a couple and the rather suspicious circumstances. So I think there's been quite a lot of betting around cricket for an awful lot of time. And if you put as much money into the IPL, why are players going to India to play cricket for 2 months? Well, obviously because they're earning $1 million a pop for doing so. If there's that much money swirling around, their entire motivation is to play for the Delhi Daredevils, who or whoever may be, isn't going to be the love of their cricket team. It's probably not even going to be love of cricket. It's going to be for the lucre. And when your principal motivation is money, then it becomes a great deal easier for bookmakers to get at you, I would have thought.
I mean, put yourself in Chris Cairns' boots. I mean, you know, there may be an element of being counterproductive, but if somebody says that about you, as, you know, Mark Reason or Steve McCabe or Rosemary or Jim, the temptation is, in fact, to take it to court and clear your name. And you can understand that.
Yeah, but Jim, you can only do that if you've got a lot of money. I mean, if you're not a rich person, you haven't got a hope in hell. Libel is a rich person's sport. You know, who's going to act for you for nothing when the odds are very uncertain? You take my point. I mean, you and I can get something really vile said about us, but we don't want to sell our house in order to get damages for it, do we?
And I would think also, Rosemary, that someone would be giving us good enough advice to say, do you really want to go through all of this? Do you want to throw this much anger out there for a year and a half? Do you want all this to be dragged into the public gaze for the possibility, and only the possibility, that you might win certain damages? And even then, people aren't going to entirely believe you, or not, some people aren't.
Well, I think, you know, it's madness, actually.
Yeah, and you would hope that the people around you would say, don't be so stupid, Mark, don't do it, it's madness. Or don't be so stupid, Chris, this is crazy.
Okay, Mark Reason, thank you for joining us. Well, Chris Cairns himself says, I feel great relief. He's pleased. I can walk into any ground in the world with my head held high. 5 to 5, Kim.com, for the first time since his arrest in January, the alleged internet pirate, Mega Upload founder, has responded to allegations in what he calls the MPAA-sponsored indictment against him. That's the Motion Picture Association of America. Eager to fight back, he refutes what he calls nonsense claims made by the US government. In addition, he appears to show, this is over the techie websites are reporting this, he appears to show that Mega Upload, he's trying to show, it wasn't a big bad pirate haven, but a legitimate service that may have been shut down for political reasons. And I don't know if you've seen the correspondence between him and companies like Fox and Disney, you know, before all this business blew up. I think we may have sent you a couple of links today. Did any of the information that Kim.com has provided to these websites, and the whole interview is on Torrent Freak, by the way, make you think again about the thin line, seemingly, between piracy and legitimacy?
Well, there's always been a very, very thin line, and it's always been very, very difficult to figure out exactly where that line is. It's worth mentioning that for example, Apple, for years, have been doing a free download of the week. Now, I can download once a week a free song from Apple. and apparently that's completely legit. I can then go to other less official, shall we say, sites. I can download the same song for free. But I'm supposed to know, and I'm supposed to be able to make a judgment every single time that getting it from Apple's kosher, getting it from one of these dodgy sites, isn't.
Yeah, it's
now,
bad.
In a lot of cases, yeah, Apple, you know, a respectable, reputable company, chances are that's on the up and up. Other sites, I'm going to have to make a value judgment every single time whether or not this is legitimate and hope that it's not going to come back and bite me.
All right, that's a typical example of consumer confusion. Dr. Erica Pearson, I better get Erica on, as a senior lecturer in the Department of Media, Film and Communication at Otago University. Erica, hello.
Hello.
We all have the impression, don't we, that when the American government, you know, possibly through pressure from film studios or whatever, found out the scale of what Mega Upload was doing, they acted. And instead, this kind of information implies that, you know, everybody kind of knew about it. There was correspondence between him and the film companies, etc., until some point where agreement couldn't be reached. Does this shed a different kind of light on what Mega Upload have done?
Well, this is tying into a lot of the public perception about the case about Mega Upload, because historically there's been a lot of legal challenges made to these kinds of sites in terms of copyright violation. But what's different with Mega Upload is this has actually been a criminal charge. So they've taken it away from the copyright debate into things about conspiracy. And so what is being released here in terms of these emails lends a bit of credence to the mythology, if you like, that there is something political going on here. But again, we have to sort of wait and see for it all to play out.
Yes, I suppose we do. But a Warner Brothers executive reportedly emailing Mega Upload seeking to expedite the process of uploading Warner content to Mega Upload. Does this raise even your eyebrows? Did you know this was actually the kind of modus operandi?
Was pretty well known in the tech industry because Mega Upload had quite a strong history, particularly with the music artists, but also with film studios, in terms of supporting through Mega Video or through file sharing legitimate uploads. And it's just like Steve said, it's a bit of continued confusion, what is legitimate and what isn't.
Yeah. So does it raise the question again, which many people have asked about, why we're bending over backwards and using time in our courts and police resources on a kind of high-stake, high-finance squabble? I'm not saying that that's what it will end up being, but that's what we ask, isn't it?
That's a really good question. And it also has really serious implications for things like the future of cloud computing, which is a really big industry and a growing industry that New Zealand's got a lot of stake in. If they go after Mega Upload and they are actually successful in these charges, that actually puts a huge question mark over sites like iTunes, like legitimate download sites, and like any sort of cloud computing where we put our own information out there on someone else's servers. Are we at risk at any point of our information getting shut down or
yes.
locked away from us just because somebody said, oh, no, there's something dodgy going on this site somewhere else?
Yes, and that worry's been underscored. You're quite right. Thank you, Erica. Dr. Erica Pearson. Wouldn't touch them with a barge pole, Rosemary.
Who, darling?
I don't know. I just thought I'd say that. It seemed like a fitting conclusion. That was what Steve was talking about when he didn't know what to download from Apple or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you do much of it?
No, I don't. I don't.
Because the path is so perilous?
Well, look, because I'm just sort of probably a bit backward with technology and I've got too many books to read and other things to do.
An excellent reason.
Yeah. And look, Hunger Games sold squillions of dollars of tickets. Is piracy really hurting the studios that badly?
Final comment from Steve McCabe. Thank you, Steve. Rosemary McLeod, always great pleasure. And Checkpoint follows. We're back tomorrow. Thank you, everyone.